Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Green Score. Now, have you ever wondered how in the world are we actually meant to be more sustainable? Sure, there are some really obvious changes, but beyond that, what can you do? Are the trainers, the baby products, or the healthcare stuff you buy sustainable? If they are not, is there any point making a change? Does it even make a difference? There's so much info out there, it can be impossible to digest it all. And that's why we're doing the Green Score. Now, today we are looking at baking, which is an absolutely enormous market. I did not realize. I found a figure here that's projected to grow from $416 billion to $590 billion by 2028, which is obviously amazing. So the question is, can you bake and can you be green? Well, to talk us through this today, we have the awesome Jen Panaro, who's the founder and editor of Honestly Modern, which is an online space about eco-friendly living for modern families. Jen, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, look, I'm not a baker, I'll be honest, Jen, but I looked on the website and I saw some pretty awesome recipes, including some amazing muffin recipes. So I suppose I wanted to start off by really asking, what's your favorite thing to bake at home?
Typically anything with chocolate. So we have a couple of the favorites in our house. We have some pumpkin chocolate chip cookies that my boys love, and actually my husband asks for all the time, and a Nutella stuffed chocolate chip cookie with some salt on the top, which is delicious. Those are some two favorites.
Oh, that sounds nice. To be honest, Jen, if I lived in your house, I'd be pretty fat, I think. I'm not going to lie to you.
I can't make them that often, because otherwise I would eat them all too. So
yeah.
I have the same issue. Like, I live alone, but I love baking. Like, it just brings me great joy at the end of the day. And all alone, I'm like, I cannot eat this all. So this is how I make friends among my neighbors, among my colleagues. I just bring baked goods. They don't need to know about my personality. Just know that I bring baking.
That sounds delicious.
She's never baked anything for me, Jen, though, so I can't confirm or deny that. Even though I've known Tana for over a year, she hasn't baked me a single thing.
I'll send you something across the ocean, Jake. It probably won't be very good by the time it gets there.
I was going to say, it might be stale.
Jen, I'd be expecting gifts from you too, just to kind of prove our friendship, okay? Well, look, Jen, thank you so much for coming on. I suppose the first thing is, can you tell us a bit more about yourself and also a bit more about Honestly Modern as well?
Yeah, sure. So I live in Pennsylvania in the United States, just outside of Philly. I have two boys who are 8 and 10 years old. And I, over the last probably 5 to 7 years, have really developed an interest in sustainability, particularly as it relates to just everyday families. I was hanging out in the blogging space for a while, had a blog, Honestly Modern. And over time, I really just started focusing on, how can I help other families figure out the sort of sustainable living thing that I felt was, especially at the time when I started, was really not always accessible to families. Like, it felt like everything was so much harder with kids. So my intent was, how do I turn all this stuff that I'm reading and learning into things that are applicable to everyday families that are just sort of, doing their thing in the suburbs or the city or wherever they are, and really, really make it feel like, they can do it and they know where to get started.
Yeah, was this kind of been informed by your own journey? Maybe you said, obviously, you're a mum of three. You're super busy, I'm guessing, with just general life. I mean, did you struggle in the same way in trying to, kind of keep chasing your tail, just trying to keep going, but also live sustainably?
Yeah, I felt like it was hard, and I mean, it's still hard. I think we're still swimming upstream, and especially in a culture like in the United States that's very consumer driven and consumption driven, it's hard to buy less stuff and sort of choose things that are more sustainable and not just always default to like the quick, easy, convenient thing that maybe isn't really the best option. So I still feel like it's hard. And as I'm doing the research and sort of following my curiosity and getting answers, then I think, hey, all right, I can put this on the internet and maybe someone else can find the answer and it can make it easier for them.
Yeah. I having a look at the blog, I think it's awesome that, because like you said, it can be so hard to kind of track what you're doing, right? It's hard to, life's busy. I think it's really cool. There are just some really actionable steps, but not just on baking. Obviously, there's all sorts of different things on there, aren't there, in terms of different tips you can apply across.
Yeah, the blog covers all sorts of different things from, it's baking and cooking and kitchen, bathroom. It's, we just got an electric vehicle. So it's, how is that really accessible? And trying to answer some of the questions, like when, someone in my life says, you've got an EV, like, can you take a road trip? Like, how do you do that now? And I'm like, yes, we can. I'm going to write a blog post about this and answer this question for other people. This is how it works. And, you know, just because I'm like sort of excited to talk about it. So it's all different aspects of life. Like I said, my kids play sports. So I cover topics about, you know, everything from sports gear. We go hiking, we travel. You know, how do we make those things a little, you know, a little bit more sustainable? And how do we sort of continue to take baby steps along the way? We're not perfect. No one's expected to be perfect. But how can we do like a little bit better each day?
Yeah, that's awesome. And actually, just where is that passion for sustainability? Where does it come from? What kind of drives it?
You know, I started out sort of thrifting clothes and thinking about secondhand clothes and the environmental impacts of clothes. And realized like, oh my gosh, this kind of stinks. Like how much damage this industry is doing. You know, how can I do better? And I think once, you know, everybody can be interested in sustainability, but I think especially once a lot of people have kids, they're sort of thinking a little bit longer term beyond just themselves, right? Like, what is this world going to look like for my children when they're my age? And, you know, we're seeing more and more impacts from, you know, the climate crisis and weather events and all that kind of stuff just every day. And I think like, what can I do to sort of get myself and other people and my kids to start thinking about this a little bit more and taking action to live a lifestyle that's going to create a better planet for all of us.
Yeah, I agree. I love how there are lots of little steps. I think it can be overwhelming, can't it? And you don't have to be perfect. But also, yeah, I think, you know, since I only had my son 3 months ago, so it's quite new to me, you know, being a dad, and definitely makes me think, you know, when he's say 30, 40, that would be 20, 50, 20, 60. I mean, you know, you want to try and do something, don't you, as a parent? So yeah, I think it's awesome, Jen. I think it's a great idea. And I love how it's also no pressure as well. It's a good way of looking at it.
Thanks.
Yeah. And I mean, that's what we want to do with this podcast as well. We want to give ideas. We want to give simple tips. We don't want people to feel like you have to do everything, every single thing that we say. Well, that would be awesome. And we will definitely applaud you if you do that. Like, no one is keeping track. Just do the best that you can whenever you can.
I think making that sort of wholesale lifestyle overhaul is just pretty inaccessible to most people. So it's an unrealistic expectation, and it's not going to work for most of us. So,
but to start with one area where we can make a difference. Thank you for that perfect transition, Jen. So let's talk a bit about the different equipment we need for baking. So could you tell us a little bit about what are some of the more common disposable baking supplies and how are they made?
Sure. So the first one that we'll talk about is parchment paper. It's a cellulose-based material. It's effectively like paper that's washed in an acidic substance that adds strength and gives it that vellum-like property of parchment paper that we're familiar with. White parchment paper is bleached with chlorine, and brown parchment paper typically is not bleached. So that's one single-use item that shows up in the kitchen a lot. Some brands have started to... Most parchment paper has like, after they do the acidic wash on it, most brands of parchment paper then have like a thin coating of food-grade silicone on top of it, which helps give it that anti-stick property. Silicone is not biodegradable or compostable. So traditional parchment paper wouldn't be compostable. Also, there's a mixture of materials. We've got like paper, chemicals, silicone in that parchment paper. And so that means it's not recyclable either. Recycling items that are made of mixed materials is really difficult and not possible in most of our recycling streams. So traditionally, like the parchment paper that we're used to, there's not much we can do with it other than just throw it in the trash. There are some companies that are starting to make compostable parchment paper. So definitely a greener option. This unbleached parchment paper doesn't have the wax or silicone coating, so it doesn't have that like mixed material issue. And it can be composted because it has the, because it doesn't have that silicone coating on it. And I think we talked a little bit about, or I mentioned that like the parchment paper that is white tends to have chlorine in it. And if you're going to throw that Sorry, Jake. Yeah.
I was just going to say chlorine. I mean, chlorine's for swimming pools and to poison people in war, isn't it?
Yes, correct.
How is that on parchment paper?
Oh, I don't know.
So when you're baking with the white parchment paper, you're literally poisoning yourself. Well, I'm probably not poisoning yourself, but they're using the stuff that kills bacteria in swimming pools. That's mental.
Yes. So you can buy unbleached parchment paper. And if you're going to put it in a compost bin, when that parchment paper decomposes, the chlorine releases dioxins that really aren't great for the microbes in the compost bin or in the soil. So definitely go for that unbleached parchment paper to not only better for your compost, but also doesn't have chlorine in it for you. So, maybe the white compost parchment, or maybe the white parchment paper is prettier. I don't know.
That's so stupid. But anyway. Using chlorine. That's just dumb. Sorry. That's really, that's a great fact, Jen. I had no idea. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure my mum always used to use white parchment paper, which maybe explains something about my personality. Who knows, you know?
Well, I don't remember seeing, I mean, I feel like white, like parchment paper always used to be white, at least as far as I remember. And then like the unbleached stuff seems, I don't know, newer to me, but maybe I just wasn't paying attention. But there are some companies that are starting to make compostable parchment paper. Like you said, it's unbleached. It doesn't have that silicone coating on it. And typically what's helpful is that those packages actually have certification logos on them. So you'll know if it's compostable, which is really great. There are two main certifications that you can find that will tell you if something is compostable. One is, I think it's called TÜV Austria, and one is called BPI. The Austria one is really like European primarily, and then BPI is in the United States. But you'll see them on products in both places. So if you get to know those logos, they're pretty easy to recognize. I can't show you on podcast, but you can look them up online. but anyways, it's really great. So you can go to the store and you can be in the grocery store and you can look at the parchment paper options and see, you know, pretty easily which ones can go in your compost bin and which ones can't. So so that's one option, right? If you're looking for something that's a little bit better, you can go to the store and choose the compostable parchment paper, presuming that you have access to a composting system of some sort. So,
yeah, I actually just checked my box of parchment paper before we recorded this, and it is compostable. So
that's great.
That's awesome. Great. It does have the certification, but the downside is my apartment complex does not have composting, and I don't really have my own place to put it. So doesn't help as much, unfortunately. But it's a step in the right direction, I suppose.
Yeah, I was going to tell on the compostable stuff. I know this sounds a really basic question, but what does your compostable area of your house look like? Is it literally just, you know, well, for people who don't know how to even compost, sure. Which includes me actually. Yeah. What does it look like?
Yeah. You mean in terms of like how we as a family sort of manage the
process? Yeah.
So I guess I'll give you kind of the real answer for my house is I love to experiment with composting in a bunch of different ways. I write about it on the blog a lot, and it's actually one of the things, it's one of the most common questions I get, because people always ask me like, you know, you compost? Like, that sounds so gross. Doesn't your house stink? Don't you have issues? And just as an aside, I like to say to people, I'm like, where are your food scraps now? And they're, cause you know, they'll say like, I don't want to keep my food scraps in a bin under my kitchen sink. Like, that's so gross. And I say, where are your food scraps now? And they say, in my trash can under my sink. And I'm like, oh, you mean in a bin without a top? Like, yes, in a bin without a top. I'm like, maybe you should put it a top on it and call it a compost bin. So anyways, that's just me like being a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a punk, but anyways, so we have a lot of composting at our house. I think in general, what it would look like for most people. So typically you would have kind of a small countertop bin that is maybe about 5 or 6 inches wide and maybe like 6 or 8 inches tall. It sits on your counter and you collect your food scraps or your crumpled up parchment paper. And you put the lid on it. It has a charcoal filter underneath the lid, and that prevents smells from escaping. So, you know, we have one of those that sits on our counter, and we collect food scraps for, you know, several days. And if we take the top off, I mean, you don't want to stick your nose in there, like it will stink. But our kitchen doesn't smell, and there's no bugs, there's no issues with fruit flies or anything like that, because that charcoal filter does a really nice job of containing all of this sort of grossness of decomposing food scraps in that bin. And then once every, I'd say like 4 to 5 days, we take the compost out to one of two things. We either take it out to the compost bin, if you were to compost yourself. So you might have like an outdoor tumbler or a bin next to a garden or something like that. Dump it in there once every, like I said, 4 or 5 days, maybe even a week, depending on how many, like how, the volume of food scraps that you have. The alternative is, you know, if you have like a service, or if you have a municipality that offers drop-off, that's always my number one recommendation for people if that's accessible to you, both, you know, from a financial and time perspective. I think it is so much easier to just offload the hard work of managing the compost to someone else if you can. I know it's not accessible for everybody for a variety of reasons, but it's generally my first recommendation. So what that would look like is you'd still have that same bucket sitting on your kitchen counter, but every 4 or 5 days, you would take those food scraps, dump them in like a 5-gallon bucket. And then that 5-gallon bucket has an airtight seal, an airtight top on it. So your garage isn't going to stink, or your basement, or under your sink, or wherever you keep that bucket of food scraps. And then every couple of weeks, you either, you know, put it at the end of your driveway and it gets picked up by the service, or you drop it off at the municipal drop-off site. For some people who are lucky enough to have municipal pickup as part of their services that are paid for with tax dollars, that's pretty awesome too. We don't have that very much in the United States, but they do have it in some other countries. So that's kind of like the sort of, it sits on your counter for a few days, gets moved to like a bigger space, and then over time it decomposes either in your own yard or in somebody else's processing system. It's real, like you make the change, and for maybe a couple of weeks, it's like you're getting used to like putting your food scraps in a different place as opposed to your trash. But after that, it becomes second nature and it's really easy. So
that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, you can stick your parchment paper right in that bin.
Exactly.
And that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I just wanted to say, like, there's definitely so many benefits to composting versus landfill. When you landfill food waste, it almost always is going to emit a ton of methane, which is a really powerful greenhouse gas. Whereas when you're composting it, it's much more of a controlled environment, and they're able to transform that food waste into nutrients that can be used for growing other plants. So there's definitely a lot of benefits to composting versus just chucking it in the landfill.
For sure.
And my mom loves it.
Yeah, there's actually, like, it sounds silly, but there's like this emotional good feeling about composting. And my husband always says, my husband is not like a green person or like an eco-focused person at all. He's just, you know, he's like a normal dude. And he always says to me, he's like, you have to tell people how much less trash we have. Like, it's not this one-to-one, like, oh, I have this little bucket of food scraps and my trash is, you know, the same volume less. I honestly don't, I can't even explain why, but we have so much less trash. And people who compost, I think, will by and large tell you the same thing. I mean, there are weeks as a family of four when we have one bag of trash. And for, you know, for people living in the United States, that is jaw dropping in a lot of situations. And that's not just me, right? I'm not like being different than anyone else. It's just sort of when you compost, there's this one, some of the waste is actually diverted, right? You have less waste. But I think there's just this like sort of mental equation that's constantly happening about like, what am I throwing in my trash? Does it belong there? Should I be throwing this away? Yeah. Wow. I'm throwing away a lot of stuff. And so really there ends up being a lot less waste landfill, like waste generated, in total. It's pretty crazy.
It's awesome. And I guess you've touched on the compostable parchment paper options.
Yeah.
Are there any other kind of greener baking supply options that people can be on the lookout for?
Yeah, sure. So if we stick with parchment paper, because I know like Taylor, you said you don't have a lot of compost accessibility at this point. So, you know, compostable products aren't going to do everyone a whole lot of good if they don't actually have a system to compost them, which a lot of people don't. So From the parchment paper perspective, you can also think about like replacing a single-use product with a reusable product. So in the case of parchment paper, a good alternative would be like a silicone baking mat. So from a cost perspective, a roll of, I did a little bit of math before we got on the phone, a roll of 45 feet of parchment paper costs about $4 in the United States. And you can get a silicone baking mat for about $8. So it's sort of two boxes of parchment paper. So if you have that much parchment paper and you think about the size of a cookie sheet, for example, which is what we're using it on most of the time, especially if we're baking, those two containers would last for like 45 or 50 uses for the parchment paper. A silicone baking mat would definitely last 45 or 50 times, over the course of its life. So I think the silicone baking mat is probably a better long-term investment. Again, if you can make that upfront investment in the baking mat. I personally think that they cook better too, but that's just me.
Interesting. Really?
I do.
Okay. So greener and better. Greener and better food.
Yeah, I think so. Better Nutella stuffed cookies with a little stuff on top.
That sounds so good. Sorry, bit going off topic here.
No worries. That silicone baking mat at some point, it is going to get to its end of life where you're not going to be able to use it anymore. We talked before about how silicone is not really a recyclable product in many typical recycling streams. So there are some special recycling programs. Again, most people aren't going to have access to them. But you can take that silicone baking mat and cut it up and turn it into things like trivets or oven mitts, drawer liners. There are definitely other uses for them once they're no longer serving you as a baking mat. And at the end of the day, like, we're all just going to have some waste. So it's just the idea, right, is to make it as little as possible.
As little as possible and as far down the road as possible, I think.
Absolutely. Very true.
Yeah, and
very
I know that some silicone mat companies actually have their own recycling programs. So I think Simple Ecology, like, they will take back their silicone pads, although you can't send ones from other companies, unfortunately. And I know that TerraCycle, I believe, also will take them. So there are a few options if you want to. Once you've made trivets, once it no longer can be used for anything, think about maybe sending it to one of those programs. And for sure. Yeah, I did some math as well. We're both on the math side, Jen. This is great. And just in terms of like the environmental impact, because it can sometimes be a little bit difficult to weigh the impacts of something reusable that maybe takes more energy to make in the first place versus something disposable. And in this case, making silicone takes about 0.6 kilos of CO2 per sheet to produce. Whereas parchment paper is going to take about 0.025 kilos of CO2 per sheet to produce and dispose, so kind of full life cycle. So that means you need to use your reusable silicone mat about 23 times before it evens out. And as you said, it's going to last probably at least 50 times. So you're already going to be winning there. So I'd say this is a definite good mark in my book.
Agreed. Definitely.
Also, no chlorine.
Yeah, no chlorine. That's true. I've got one more for you if you want to talk about aluminum foil.
Please, yeah.
Yeah. So aluminum foil, as its name implies, it's made of aluminum. And metals like aluminum are definitely recyclable. They're not compostable. So aluminum foil should never be added to a compost pile. But metals like aluminum are really valuable in the recycling stream because they can be recycled many times over without quality deterioration. So they can be recycled and recycled and recycled, which is great. And it isn't always the case with all recyclable materials. So when we think about aluminum foil, as far as using it from a baking perspective, there's a couple things to think about. First of all, the food remnants will contaminate the metal recycling process. So we can't take aluminum foil that's really dirty and just toss it in our recycling bin. If you can rinse it off or clean it, it can go in your recycling bin. If it's already clean or whatever. So that's one thing, right? If it's dirty and you don't really have a great way to clean it, or you're just not going to clean it, it should go in your trash. If it's clean enough, if it's sort of clean metal, go ahead and toss it in your recycling bin. The second thing to think about with aluminum foil is that the pieces can't be too small. So really small pieces of any type of metal will kind of jam up the recycling systems and cause some problems in the sorting process. But with aluminum foil, you can take all those little pieces, ball them up together, and either, you know, if it's a large enough ball, just toss that clean ball of aluminum foil into your recycle bin. Or you can do it like toss it in a soda can or something similar so that it's all really like combined together. And that makes, again, that makes that process in the recycling system much easier for the machines to handle. So aluminum foil, I think, is a great option if you, you know, if it's, if you can clean it from an environmental perspective, right? Again, you could replace it with something like a baking mat, depending on how you're using it. Obviously use it for other purposes as well. So those are a couple of things to think about. The third element with respect to aluminum foil to consider is that there are some companies making recycled aluminum foil, and they're generally about the same cost in terms of if you compare like brand to brand, the same brand with recycled versus virgin material or aluminum. And so if you can find recycled aluminum foil, that definitely will be a better option. Recycled aluminum usually uses like 80% less energy to produce than the virgin material. So that's good from an environmental perspective as well. We're saving energy. And then the other thing to think about too, in terms of like kind of any recycled products, is the recycling the things that we use is only as good as the end market for that recycling processor. Like they have to have a market to sell the recycled goods into to be reused, if that makes sense. So the more that we can use products that are made from recycled materials and create markets for recycled, I guess you call them like materials or ingredients, the more robust that recycling system can become, the easier it is for us to make it more accessible to people, the less expensive it is. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to that. So that's kind of another like reason why choosing recycled aluminum foil would be better than, say, regular aluminum foil.
I was going to say, Taylor, how often does this come up that we've had this debate about how consumers can drive change? As you were saying, Jen, we can create markets, we can create change. Yes. All right, Taylor, we've talked about this quite a lot, haven't
absolutely.
We?
Yeah, absolutely. It's come up, I feel like, in at least 50% of these episodes. And I mean, our listeners can't see me, but I've been like nodding and bowing to Jen here because everything she's saying is totally accurate. I mean, especially for plastic, because there are just very few markets for recycled plastic right now. The aluminum space is much more developed. There's much more of an end use for that recycled material. But like plastic, we're still working on it. So anytime you can buy recycled is usually a good one.
Yeah, it's tough sometimes. Like I think in the case of aluminum foil, at least when I was looking at products, the prices were comparable. Sometimes I've gone like, I think I was at the store a few weeks ago and I was looking at like recycled printer paper versus normal. And the recycled printer paper was twice as expensive. And I was like, I want to buy the recycled, but I just can't expect the whole world to like do this. This is not accessible to people. So again, like the more we as consumers can drive that market and create that, you know, create a higher demand, then hopefully the prices will go down, right? So
yeah, that's another thing that's come up lots, Jed, as well. I think, again, I feel like we're on a kind of like telepathic here because the other thing that's come up, we're talking about a lot, that it's quite easy for probably all of us, I'd say we're relatively middle class, I'm guessing. We have some disposable income that we can afford to make greener choices, right? Whereas I do appreciate lots of people don't, which is fair enough. I think it's on people like us who do have some spare cash to make the changes, like you said, hoping that cumulatively it will also bring the cost down. So yeah, could not agree with you more there.
Yeah, I often say like with privilege comes responsibility. I think that applies in so many areas of life. But it's definitely kind of a principle that I live by in terms of, you know, our environmental choices and things that I make. So sort of where someone's privilege is higher, their responsibility to do something about the problem is correspondingly higher as well.
Yeah, completely agree. Just one thing I was going to mention for the English listeners, aluminium is aluminium in the UK. Yeah, I did a podcast with Taylor, Jen, and some of my friends messaged me saying, "What is that?" And I said, "It's aluminium." So just for the transatlantic relationship here, I just had to mention that.
Thank you. And I have to say, when Jake and I finally met in person for the first time, I think it was last month, Jake greeted me by saying, "Aluminum." So yeah,
it could work the other way around. By the way, the joke could work the other way around. You know, you could take the mick out of me and call me aluminium. So just sort of something to mention. So Jen, you obviously got some really good points there. I just wondered maybe if there's kind of anything else for listeners that you could mention around sustainable baking at all.
I think you've got, you mean like in terms of other items?
Yeah, items or maybe more, even kind of more generally, maybe even ingredients, kind of anything that, you know, if you're trying to be a green baker, a few other top tips.
Yeah, sure. So when I am thinking about more sustainable baking, I think about things like what is the packaging that the ingredients are coming in. So for example, I might be able to find flour or sugar in either a plastic bag or a paper bag. If I can find it in a paper bag, I'm going to choose that, all else being equal, because I can compost that paper bag when I'm done. So that's one of them. Buying in bulk is usually helpful. There's usually less packaging if you're buying in bulk. If you can bake with local or seasonal ingredients, that can really reduce the carbon footprint of the transportation associated with the ingredients that you're using. So to the extent that you know, it's accessible for you to support a local farmer or to buy from a farmer's market, things like that, or to buy from a vendor who sources locally, that can be a really good environmental decision as well. We've always got the leftovers, right? Like, what do you do when there's extras? Mm-hmm. Like, don't throw them away, right? If you're Taylor, give them to your neighbor. if you have a freezer, put them in your freezer. A ton of stuff can be frozen and is just as fantastic on the other end when you know, 2 months later, take it out of the freezer and you're like, I have fresh baked goods and I didn't do anything. So, you know, making sure that you're not wasting food is a really great idea as well. I think those are some of the things that I'm sort of always thinking about when it comes to sustainable baking more generally.
Yeah, those are great. And I know food waste is a huge issue. It's a huge contributor to our annual global yes. greenhouse gas emissions. So anytime you can minimize that, please do. I have some banana walnut muffins in my freezer at the moment. And I'm like, oh, I should get one of those out. Just pop it in the microwave yes. for 30 seconds. It'll be great.
Exactly. And I think, you know, one other kind of silly but sort of poignant thought that always comes to my mind is, what would my grandmother have done? My grandmother, I mean, she was incredibly self-sufficient. She was raised on a farm. She can, you know, she's the most, it's crazy the stuff that she can whip up out of almost nothing. And she was always making sure that she, you know, made the most of what she had and, was reusing and repurposing and all sorts of things like that. So I think a lot of us probably have grandmothers or, you know, grandparents or whatever, that we can look back on and be like, you know, what would my grandmother have done? And like, that's probably a good guiding principle in a lot of cases, to think about, you know, how can we, use the things that we already have instead of buying something new or, you know, borrow something from a neighbor, right? Like maybe you have a, there's some big appliance, like a food processor, right? That's really expensive, but it might be something you only use once or twice a year, depending on, on your habits. So do you have a neighbor that has one? Like, just borrow it instead of buying something new. Save yourself the money and all of the production and carbon expense of making more stuff and taking up more space and all that too. So
that's a lovely, my grandma's always like, I always talked about this, and you know, she grew up in the war years, so probably similar to, you know, probably I'm guessing similar.
Yep.
And they were like, you know, they just didn't have as much. They were more careful. And I think it's nice, isn't it? They were much more efficient with how they use stuff. Whereas now everything's so easy, right? Including mm-hmm. food, that you kind of take it for granted. So I really like that. Think what would grandma do? What WWGD? Okay. That's so catchy, isn't it? Yeah. WWGD. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Jen, you've given us some like awesome tips. Maybe you could just like briefly, before we go on to the green score, just kind of sum it up, you know, in terms of the baking objects we're talking about, just kind of a brief kind of top takeaways on what we can do.
Sure. So I think we talked about parchment paper. If you have access to a compost system and you can buy a compostable parchment paper, that's great. If you want to use a silicone baking mat, that's also an awesome option. If you use aluminum foil and don't have like a reusable alternative for that, you can clean it, recycle it, make sure you crumple it up so that it's in larger pieces and not in those little pieces. And then, you know, use what you have, like try to buy local if you can. Think about the packaging, reduce the plastic. I think those are some sort of simple takeaways. And if you can, you know, you don't have to do all of them tomorrow, but if you can start doing one or two of them and then do another one once you get comfortable with the first two and sort of keep that up, then that's great.
Clear and concise. I love it.
we love that, Jen. We love that.
Okay. Yeah, so
glad I could be of service.
Yeah. So I think this brings us to our green score. First off, I just wanted to say that this topic is very near and dear to my heart just because I do bake at least twice a week. It's nice to see the options out there. So we're going to start with our first green score, which is about how easy it is for us as consumers to make a green decision about these products, especially, you know, parchment paper, things like that. We're going to go from our usual black is the worst, then brown, gray is middle of the road, forest green, and lime green is our best. I'm personally going to go for gray just because there are some options, but they might not always be immediately obvious when you're in a supermarket. Yeah. What do you guys think?
Well, Jen, as the expert, Jen, I'll let you go next.
Sure.
And then I'll hide behind you probably.
Yeah. So I'm actually going to go with, is it forest green? Is that the second option? I'm going to go with forest green because I think that, you know, specifically like starting composting might not be the best option if you are choosing compostable parchment paper. But I think there are some options that are pretty accessible, like even if it's just thinking about the packaging that you're buying. So I think there are some pretty good options in terms of walking to the grocery store and, you know, choosing the bulk option or choosing the paper packaging. And really just that can be a good place to start. And then look for those compostable logos if, you know, if they, if you're choosing products that have a compostable option.
I think, Jen, I don't mean to hide behind you, even though I said I was going to, but I would go forest green too. I think two reasons for me. One, it's such a big market. I didn't realize how big baking was. I mean, I should have, but any change is good, right? And secondly, I think one thing that we talked about just earlier, I resonated with was you talking about creating markets. You know, if you make changes, it will drive people, it will drive companies who just obviously want to make money to make changes too. So I feel like it's something simple that you can do very easily without compromising on your baking. In fact, you even said you think it's, it tastes better on some of the silicone things, right? So you might even can improve your cookies and cakes. So given that, I'm gonna go with you, forest green.
Yeah, and I agree about it baking better. Like you get such a nice crisp bottom on the stuff on a parchment, not on parchment paper, on the silicone mat. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so onward to our second green score, which is about the wider global impacts that making a sustainable choice around baking supplies could have. Same color scale. I'm going to go forest green here. So again, second from the top, just because we've seen that switching to compostable parchment paper or switching to reusable silicone mat can be really quite beneficial in terms of your greenhouse gas emissions and just the energy required to make those products. So I think that, yeah, switching can be really helpful, but I'm not going lime green just because, you know, it's just one product of many that we're using in our day-to-day lives. So it's not going to change everything, but it's definitely a great place to start.
So I am going to pick forest green as well for the same reasons as Taylor, but for another reason as well. I think that baking in general is a really small aspect of someone's sort of carbon footprint, if we want to think about it. So someone switching to more green baking materials is not going to have like a big dent right away in their particular carbon footprint. But I think it is I do think it's pretty easy to start making some small changes. And I think most importantly, I think that those small changes start to give people momentum that like, oh my gosh, I can do this. This feels good. This isn't as hard as I thought. And I think that's why I think the momentum is why I give it forest green as opposed to maybe gray, because I think it can help people just get more comfortable with the idea that like living sustainably doesn't necessarily have to be hard or different or, you know, super different or challenging. There are some pretty low hanging fruit that we can start with, and that maybe baking is one of those places for a lot of people.
Jen, that's very nicely put. I think I'm going to go forest green just off the back of that. I was unsure. I was kind of maybe going gray just because I thought I think maybe if you'd mentioned like the silicon mat, for example, is there a circular economy behind it? Not as much, but I really like the idea. It's almost like a Trojan horse, isn't it, to greater change, which I think I did history at uni. You can tell I just pepper this podcast with pointless history references. But I think you said it's small changes that can lead to bigger changes. And you know, I think this goes back to one of the best things I thought about the website, about the blog, was the fact that it provides small changes that can lead to a bigger change, and it's not as overwhelming that way. So yeah, I'm going Forest Green too. I think it's there's changes you can make, and you can still enjoy your food, which, you know, that's kind of a win-win, isn't it?
I agree, definitely.
Yeah, so we have a consensus. Woo!
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, look, Jen, thank you so much for coming on. I suppose we can't finish the show, though, without asking. You've obviously thrown in a few, like, you know, recipes there. If I was going on Honestly Modern and I was trying to cook something, what would be your favorite recipe? What's your kind of, you know, you're meeting the Pope and you have to pull one out?
I'm going to go with the pumpkin chocolate chip cookies. As a heads up, they're a little bit more, the consistency is a little bit more like a muffin top than like a chocolate chip cookie that's kind of denser and crunchier. But they are super popular. Everyone who's ever had them loved them. And my sister even had them. She asked the caterers at her wedding to make them as the dessert at her wedding. So I'm going to go with pumpkin chocolate chip cookies. We're coming into fall, so pumpkin is, you know, all the rage right now. So it's appropriately seasonal as well. So go check that out.
I'm in. And when, Jen, did you say you'd be sending the shipment over to London? I didn't quite catch that.
I don't know if it's going to make it fresh, but I'll see what I can do.
A shipping container worth, did you say? Excellent. Okay, great. Yeah, yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Brilliant. Well, look, Jen, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been awesome. And like you said, you know, we've said a few times, I think I love the mission behind Honestly Modern, and I love the approach that you take that is, you know, you don't have to overhaul everything, just start small, do something and see where it goes. So yeah, love the mission. Thank you very much for talking us through baking. Taylor, you've fulfilled your dream finally, right?
Yeah, it's been on the list since the beginning, I think.
We finally got there. So Jen, thank you so much. For everyone listening, thanks once again. And tune in for next episode. Jen, once again, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Awesome. Well, thank you everyone for listening. And don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. Please message us with any suggestions you've got for future episodes. And next week or next time, we have coffee coming up. Can you drink coffee and be green? So please join us for that one. Thank you for listening, and hopefully see you all soon.